You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Phil and Kyle start a podcast, and Rudy Gobert comes to town. Hardly a coincidence, it's Flagrant Howls with Phil Mackey and Kyle Tighe.
Welcome in to your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. It's Phil, it's Kyle. I've got my Victory Monday, shameless plug, Purple Daily so hooded sweatshirt here. Scorenorth.com/shop if you want to celebrate an 8-1 Vikings team with a Victory Monday hooded sweatshirt. But the Timberwolves have finally got back in the win column. D'Angelo Russell, let's spend the first part of the episode just kind of talking about last night here. We'll get to some favorite, least favorite things and some flagrant or no. But how many shots of Henny did you have yesterday celebrating the 8-1 Vikings?
I thought we talked that would be off the record. No, I just woke up yesterday and was like, okay, this is a good sports day from Minnesota. Like football game and then transitions right into a basketball game. Two good games, two like Cavs, Bills, good opponents. And I wasn't going to drink, and then halftime, I was like, I need a mimosa. This Vikings game's a little over the top, and then it just spiraled, and it went from one mimosa to two to three to six, and then it's like I'm downstairs with my neighbors. Now there's Henny, and now there's like just Kahlua and everything, and so then I'm drunk texting you as you're working. I'm just like, God, put your phone away. I couldn't help myself, but yeah, good day for Minnesota sports. The Twins should have like, I don't know, they could have dropped bad news yesterday and no one would have known.
Yeah, they could have dropped their uniforms yesterday.
Exactly, you know? That would have been a good time. Just like, hey, push those uniforms out.
Yeah. This is what happens when you say, I'm going to do a shot every time some crazy-ish happens in the Bills-Vikings game. And it's like, oh, God, 12 crazy things happen.
Oh, great, I'm at the hospital.
Ridiculous.
Getting my stomach pumped. But no, that was a great Vikings game right into a really good Timberwolves game, all things considered. I know we'll talk about the fourth quarter, but they looked good yesterday. They tried, they gave an effort. D'Lo bounced back, and... Wow. What do you know? They're 6-8.
What a bar. They tried. Let's give it up for the Timberwolves. They tried.
10 players sweated yesterday. Let's go.
They gave up a 50 burger, but that's fine. So, well, the biggest headline from yesterday's game is the Wolves claw back to 6-8 on the season with a 129-124 win over the Cavs. D'Angelo Russell finally came out of his coma to start the season here. With one of his best games as a Timberwolf,
yep.
Perhaps?
Yep.
30 points on 13 shots, 4 of 5 from three-point range. He also dished out 12 assists. He grabbed a couple of rebounds after grabbing zero rebounds against Memphis in like 26 minutes. And was just kind of, he got himself going, and then he was a straw that stirred the drink. D'Lo, and I'll throw this out right away. One thing that does kind of bother me is like, oh, we're going to celebrate this D'Lo performance. And I want to be careful about not setting too low of a bar here for the Timberwolves as a team or for individual players. That was a great performance by D'Lo, but it should be closer to the standard. I'm not saying he has to average 30-12 because those would be absurd numbers, but like that should be closer to what he does on a nightly basis than what we saw in the first 12 or 13 games. So let's not just, okay, he did it, and now he doesn't have to do anything for like 7 more games. He should be doing stuff like this more often. Glad that he showed up finally.
Yeah, the last time we spoke was Thursday, and sandwiched in between then and now was essentially probably D'Lo's best game, one of his three best games in a Timberwolves uniform, which on Sunday, and then one of his worst games in a Timberwolves uniform on Friday night when he had like 4 points, and he was just non-existent, not a lot of assists, no rebounds. So yeah, like after Friday night's game, I recorded with Dane Moore on Saturday, and we're like, "Hey, like you can get this type of performance from anyone. You're not the bar is so low. Like, you, any player that plays in his spot in that Friday night game is going to give you those numbers, if not better. And then on Sunday, you know, conversely, it's like, okay, when he's playing at his best, you're not going to find many guys to fill that role better than he does. So total roller coaster is how it's been throughout his whole season. One of the things I found out over the weekend when I was just like looking up stats is that he's now played in more games in Minnesota than he did in Brooklyn. And wow, we're like 2 weeks away from him playing more games in Minnesota than he did in LA, where he was drafted number two overall. So you're starting to get enough of a sample size here to kind of know the type of person he is. And the volatile nature, like I said, the bads are really bads and the goods are really good, but you do need to find like a steady line of consistency. And like you just said, you're not going to expect 30 points a game, but you know, there's no reason for him not to be an efficient scorer. Get to the line, I think it's 6 free throw attempts, get to the line a couple times, and then just, again, be the straw that stirs the drink, 12 assists to 2 turnovers. He was as good on Sunday as he was bad on Friday, and that's really the reason they won. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns had 29 points as well. Rudy was great on the boards, but they won that game because D'Lo was his good version of himself, and there's no reason he can't now bring that over this week as they have, you know, Orlando Magic, Philadelphia without Harden. They have good games to kind of right this ship and get back to 500.
How many teams or fellow Pobos do you think Tim Connelly had texted or called in the hour after that game was over last night, putting out feelers about D'Lo?
I would say that if you're an assistant GM or something, all you had to do is take the YouTube video and send it to all the 29 GMs and just be like, hey, happy Sunday. I hope you saw this. Did you miss this? Like, look at this first quarter, 18 points or whatever. So, yeah, he was good. They also just – there was other things, too, that helped them win that game. Like, on Friday, Chris Finch played 10 guys. 5 of them had a rebound. That's mind-blowing.
Yes. In fact, I tweeted this out. I did the same math that you were doing. Let me pull up the box over here. So, D'Lo played 26 minutes on Friday.
Yep.
No rebounds. And then Taurean Prince, Jordan McLaughlin, Bryn Forbes, and Jalen Noel played a combined 55 minutes, maybe more than that, and grabbed no rebounds.
Yep.
All of them. And I will say, in fairness, and we can get into a Gobert discussion here too, Gobert played 35 minutes in that game against Memphis, only grabbed 6 rebounds, 1 offensive rebound. He was brought in specifically to dominate and crash the boards against Memphis, right? It was like, it was a reaction to the Memphis series that, oh man, it would be really nice to have someone kind of next to Towns that could just clean up the glass and not give up 18 offensive rebounds on the other side, which is what Memphis did in seemingly every freaking playoff game. Memphis still grabbed 15 offensive rebounds in that game, and Gobert was really just like any other Timberwolf in that playoff series. So, Gobert came up short in his job against Memphis, but his presence shouldn't prevent everyone else from also grabbing rebounds, especially ones that bounce out. Like the guards can't grab 0 rebounds in 26 minutes. I'm sorry.
No, not in a game where your counter guard, John Morant, had 10 rebounds, right? Like that was, I talked about that with Dane. That's just, not only is that statistically important to go grab rebounds, that's how a defensive stop is measured, right? It's not just having to miss a shot. It's actually getting the rebound and then having the next offensive possession. But it's also just inspiring when you have your guards attacking. There was in the Friday night game, they like mic'd up the coaches and they did a little shot of the timeouts or whatever. And Finch was rah-rah on his guys while Taylor Jenkins from Memphis was like, I love how all 5 of you guys are crashing the glass. And it was, again, kind of a subtweet at what Minnesota wasn't doing. But it's just helpful when it can't all be Rudy, right? Would the numbers kind of say that the Wolves are almost rebounding worse this year than they did last year, and rebounding was their bugaboo, but it's got to be more than Gobert. So, yeah, Friday was pretty much led. The Wolves are in this weird, we've talked about this two-timeline kind of thing where they have the young guards like Jaden and Ant, and they have kind of the more established veteran trio of Rudy, Carl, and D'Lo. And Friday was all the young guys. Ant and Jaden had, I thought, 2 of their best games of the season. Jaden was phenomenal on defense. I know he fouled out again. That's a problem. But then against the Cavs, I mean, Ant was kind of non-existent. Jaden was good defensively again. But Carl, Rudy, and D'Lo just were like, hey, we're going to win this game, right the ship. And they did that. So,
yeah,
just a weird 2 games. Like, speaking of sample size, I just want to see the next 2 games now, because you had probably one of the worst losses of the season just by performance, because that was a winnable game on Friday, and then a really good win despite what the box score said at the end. That was a double digit win. They just kind of let go of the rope in the fourth quarter, and that's concerning. We can focus on that, I don't know, down the road, but that's what teams do, those two. Like, it's a league of runs, and teams just kind of fire back. I'm not super concerned that they blew that lead. They won the game. That's all that matters.
I'm with you. I think it's definitely been a thing for these teams.
For sure.
Like, Carl Anthony Towns teams, for sure, in the last, 7 years. It was a thing with Kevin Love, Timberwolves teams. It's been a franchise thing for a long time that no 20-point lead is ever safe, apparently. Mm-hmm.
It is a Chris Finch thing, too. Like, we like Finch a lot, but Finch does, if you go back now, it's one of the rare criticisms I have of him is that he doesn't really run a lot of plays in the fourth. Like, this team needs a little more structure, and because they have a lot of guys that do want to ISO. D'Lo wants to ISO.
And Ant's just taking these dumb threes, you know, with a minute and a half left as the lead is dwindling. Like, the answer to them going on a 15-point run isn't dribble the ball for 20 seconds and chuck a three from 25 feet.
That's... Which is what he actually specifically 45 seconds left yesterday. They're up three. Ant just ISO'd, dribble, took a long two and made it. It was very clutch. It was like, oh, a breath of fresh air. But that's not the shot you want. It's not going to the rim. It's not moving the ball. Everyone else is stagnant. So, yeah, good result, bad process. But that'll be something as they kind of figure this out moving forward, whoever they close with. They have to – I think Chris Finch needs to make them run more plays, because otherwise they're just – D'Lo or Ant's just going to ISO and that's not what you want. Or Carl's going to ISO and that's not what you want.
Just to put a bow on the D'Lo conversation here, to what extent did his performance and then the subsequent team performance, I get that the Cavs were sort of depleted.
Yep.
It's kind of funny because on one hand, like, they had, like, Mobley doesn't play and they were depleted. But on the other hand, Garland drops 51 points and had 10 of 15 from downtown, one of his best shooting games of the season. So you're not going to get that every night. But to what extent did D'Lo's arrival and then the subsequent team performance give you some level of hope and optimism going forward here?
Yeah, you know, we're at a level now in the NBA, like, what, almost 20% into the season, where we don't need to always mention, like, who doesn't play. I mean, we're doing it to be truthful, but, like, you're just going to play these teams now and the guys sitting out, you know, load management, all this stuff. So, yeah, no Donovan Mitchell, no Jared Allen.
Yeah,
that would have been nice to see the Wolves big, you know, big center combo play against the Cavs big center combo. But it was a good win. I mean, I really do. If Donovan Mitchell plays, Garland's not taking 30 some shots and putting up 50. Yeah. That's just not.
I said Mobley didn't play. Sorry. Jared
Allen.
Mobley did play. He played 32 minutes, scored 4 points. He basically didn't play offensively, but yes.
I was going to say, to your point, Carl Anthony Towns kind of played Mobley off the floor. And Mobley is, if you've never watched a game, but you're a big historical Timberwolves fan, go watch a couple Evan Mobley performances. He really has all of the young KG characteristics. The way he moves, he kind of runs like a gazelle. He just can do everything. But Towns just took it to him yesterday. And between that and how D'Lo, make or miss league, he still was taking a lot of the same shots yesterday that he's missed. So if maybe just seeing the ball go through the basket takes him out of a rut, he's coming up for these next couple games against teams that don't really defend the guards well. I mean, Orlando's bigger, but they don't have the most diverse set of guards. So should be another big D'Lo night, and then you go up and play against the Sixers without Harden. So it kind of gave you, again, you never want to get too low, I don't think, on any of this stuff. You don't ever want to get too high. So I'm not thinking the Wolves are necessarily back after beating a somewhat depleted Cavs team, but they did a lot of things. Again, we said that on Friday they had 5 of their 10 guys get a rebound. Well, last night, anyone who played over a minute got a rebound. So you had 9 guys. Again, I know that sounds really low.
It's a really low bar, but it's
rebound,
fair.
But it's part of the process of, like, we need guys to, you know, attack the basket more. I think Ant had 7 rebounds. McLaughlin had 4. So just having your guards kind of dig in and help out allows Rudy to kind of do his thing more. Carl also had 13 rebounds as well. So good performance. We're not going to crown them back to the 50 is nifty yet, but good to build on. Sometimes too, just like, I remember when Carl Anthony Towns said that your food tastes better after you win and, like, you just sleep better. Like, I slept better. My food tasted better. I'm a little hungover, but that's not the point. Yeah. And now you set yourself up with a couple of days off. They actually flew back to Minnesota, get a couple practices in, and then go down to Orlando and, you know, try to get back to 500. That's the first step.
Yeah. Okay, let's go through some of our – so we had the D'Lo conversation there. Let's go through some of our favorite and least favorite things about this Timberwolves team right now. We do this on the Monday episodes. We take your comments and questions on Ask Flagrant Howls, where we go through the comment section on the Thursday episode. And so these favorite and least favorite things presented by our friends, a shout out to Federated Insurance. So Federated has been around for over 100 years. They have a ton of experience and credibility when it comes to just being a guiding hand for businesses. They're all about, it's like having a nice little shot blocker at the rim to help thwart off risks, or having a great offensive line for your quarterback. Risk management tools and resources at federatedinsurance.com, where it's our business to protect yours. Okay, let's start with our favorite things about the Timberwolves right now. I'm going to give you just kind of an under-the-radar one.
Okay.
Slow-mo.
Okay.
It feels like he is giving you exactly what you signed him to provide, which is like 15 to 25 minutes off the bench, a steady guiding hand, a guy that on any given night can score a little bit if you need it, can grab it. It's almost like he takes the temperature of the game and comes in and says, okay, this game could use a little bit more ball movement, and so I'm going to be a facilitator. Okay, we need to facilitate some offense now, and so I'm going to score 12 points or whatever it was, like in the Memphis game. And then last night, again, he played, let's see here, it was 21 minutes and had the second best plus minus of any player on the court. He was a plus 17 in 21 minutes last night. His net rating per 100 possessions when he's on the court is 6 points better than when he's off the court. And so I think he's been as advertised to this point, Kyle Anderson, off the bench.
Even the box score, if that's all you saw from the Cavs game, he had 6 points, five assists, three rebounds, 2 for 2 from three. I think he's shooting like 46% from three, which I don't think is sustainable, but I will take it. But he also had no turnovers. And again, that's just kind of why they brought him in. He is just, it's, you know, too played out, but he is a Swiss Army knife. He just does all the little things. And like you said, if they need him to go do this and patch this hole, he will. If they need him to facilitate, he will. If they need him to just get to the line or get to the basket a couple times, he had a couple really nice, just like everything is slow and herky jerky and it confuses all the defenders. And he had these two really nice drop offs to Towns for just easy dunks.
He's like a pitcher that throws knuckleballs or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, and it just, man, I'm going to hit a 500 foot bomb off this. And it's like, you're just, your body isn't used to having to wait for the pitch to cross.
I know
the plate.
It makes my joints hurt just like watching it, because like, oh man, he, like every move he makes, it's like going to be a torn ACL. So he but he also is smart enough, and he's played on teams and with coaches with San Antonio, Memphis. He also knows that the most important thing, and this is what was kind of pissing us off about the D'Lo stuff, he knows to just get his teammates involved and get the guys who need to be fed, like get Rudy a touch, get Carl an easy dunk, because that's how you just, it's all mental, getting these guys to see the ball go through the net. So he's been fantastic. He was a plus 17 yesterday, only played 21 minutes. Chris Finch is going to rely on him anytime the train goes off the tracks. He's going to be like, I got to throw Kyle in there, might maybe at the four, maybe at the one, whatever. And he's been great.
Give me something. Let's throw a few out there on the positive front, because it's not often we get to react to a Timberwolves win, it feels like lately. So what's another thing that you would put in your favorites bin?
Well, again, Friday was one of just everyone was kind of bad except for Ant Jaden. Sunday, everyone was pretty good except for maybe Ant. But I'm starting to see, and I don't know how closely sometimes people watch this, although Sunday night there was kind of an extreme example, but starting to see Rudy Gobert start to pull guys aside a little more, like after plays.
Yeah.
It's usually when they've had a defensive lapse resulting in like free throws or an and one or something. But I've noticed him, and maybe I just didn't notice it before, but I've definitely noticed it this weekend, where he's like physically grabbing his teammates in a professional way, but being like, hey.
He choke slammed one of them yesterday.
Well, yesterday he almost powerbombed D'Lo off the court, which was a little interesting, but that just seemed to be a heat of the moment. No big issue. But yeah, I think he's starting to take an on-court leadership role, and maybe he's just, hey, we're 15 or so games into this. I feel more comfortable. I'm a little healthier, whatever. But I mean, he is the best defender on this team. He is the guy who knows how to defend better than anyone. The awards and the statistics back it up. So maybe now they're starting to find that guy. I mean, we joked about it, but who is going to huddle the people up during free throws? And it might be Rudy Gobert, and he's been in Jaden's ear a lot. He's been, you know, him and TP had a couple of situations yesterday where he was trying to explain, like, you got to do this on the roll, you got to do this to help me out. And that's big. I know it sounds minor, but you and I have really been on the leadership veteran kind of spokesperson thing for a while. And if Rudy's out there telling his guys how to be in better positions, that's the same thing we wanted from Ricky Rubio when he was on the team, or Patrick Beverley. So I thought that was really good. I think it's good that Rudy is feeling comfortable enough to start to be a voice both in that locker room and on the court.
The Rudy thing is so interesting in that Jazz fans would probably be, pouring their own cocktail, just watching and laughing at us try to do the mental gymnastics here and say, yeah, this is what we were trying to do for years and years, in that he's been everything as advertised. He's leading the NBA in rebounds. He is scoring 14 points on 8 shots per game. So I know he's not a great offensive player, but when he does take shots, whether they are point blank or dunks or whatever, like, he is a highly efficient offensive player. And yet when he is on the court versus off the court, it's kind of a train wreck in a bad way for him. So his on off, when he's on the court versus off the court, it's a 10 point swing in overall net rating. 10.5 point swing, meaning that the Timberwolves are 10 points better per 100 possessions than when he's off the court. So it's kind of this weird conundrum of you're trying to figure out how to play around him. He is a valuable asset individually. I'm not ready to say that, like, him and Cat can't play together, this and that. I would be curious to see some different lineup combinations to start the game too. They just keep rolling out the same starting lineup. Mm-hmm. At this point, you're not benching D'Lo anymore because he just put up, like, D'Lo has given himself 10 more games of grace before that conversation starts again. So I know I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to reconcile how good he has been individually and his skill sets versus the oil and water feel to the team when he's on the court to this point early on. And maybe all of this is to just be expected because they didn't get a lot of time, him and Towns, to play together in the preseason, and they're still only 14 games into this new venture.
Yeah, and something else too that, I don't know, it's kind of my own conspiracy theory, but I also wonder if he's just not fully healthy yet or just still trying to regain whatever he was missing coming into the season. Some people have been like, well, maybe he just aged rapidly this summer and this is like the new version of him, but he's averaging like a career low in blocks since his rookie year. He's always been north of 2 blocks a game. He's averaging like 1.5, again, relatively still small sample because he missed some games, but he hasn't, you and I have been like, wow, he has been such a great presence around the rim, but he still hasn't been like the defensive player of the year presence. And I'm not going to go with a conspiracy theory because he was that dude in Eurobasket. Like, he looked really, really athletic. So there's just been moments where, like, he's not going up for a rebound or he's not trying to contest a shot that I'm like, okay, maybe he just doesn't have full, he hasn't fully charged the batteries yet of his knees. But I mean, he's not, I think the Rudy Gobert experience, again, for the 9th straight week has been just as advertised and I've really liked it. But he is the one guy that I think there are still multiple levels to still unlock. And I don't mean posting him up, but just if he does get those block and steal numbers up to where we're used to, he's also, averaging a couple of less rebounds, which, again, probably because he's playing next to another 7-footer. But he's also been pretty good on, like, free throws. He's never going to shoot 80%, but I think he's shooting like 69% again, which he's had years where he's shooting like 53%. And if you're going to involve him in the offense more or give him some post touches or just feed him on the roll, you need him to make free throws because they're going to foul him. So this is just another week of us saying, I'm not talking about compensation or all the picks stuff. I just think Rudy Gobert has been as advertised. And if they get the guards, maybe the wings, to kind of dig in a little more and help rebound, you're starting to kind of see it night by night figure itself out on the court.
Yeah. Give me another one of your favorite things about the Wolves here in the last few days.
I'm so biased, and he's fouled out, I think, in both games. But
come get your guy, man. He's averaging 5 fouls per 36 minutes.
And so I rewatched the game this morning because I was, again, finally sober. And Jaden McDaniels does some dumb stuff. He just does. He entered the league with this notion of being kind of this bad boy in Washington, getting all these texts, being kind of a crazy guy. And I think he must have tried really hard to get away from that because he just, if you go back and watch his rookie year's first 20 games, he's not that physical and he's a string bean, but he's not that physical. I think he's trying to figure out now, like, how to have that edge to him. He had, like, he's had technicals this season. He had the whole throwing the ball, Russell Westbrook, trying to find, how do I be more aggressive, have more of an edge without, you know, just doing dumb things.
And grab,
he
does something.
Right. But I will say, he also, at times, like, if Rudy's not out there, he at sometimes is guarding all five guys by himself. Like, they're throwing him on. I mean, he guarded Garland for most of the game yesterday. Obviously, Garland popped off in the fourth, but I've liked just the edge that he's had. His three-point percentage is up since he kind of started the season really cold. His rebounding, you can't just get two rebounds if you play 31 minutes, but I've just liked his offensive pop a little more. But then on the downside, dude, you can't keep fouling out. If we're going to get on Carl, even though Carl has 350 more games of experience, like, not being able to be out there is a big deal because – yes, Torian Prince can guard. Yes, Ant can guard. Yes, Kyle Anderson. But Jaden McDaniels is their best on-ball defender, especially at the wing, and he just can't keep falling out. So I liked what I saw against Ja Morant. I like what I saw against Garland. I didn't like that he finished both games on the bench.
Yeah, he's some guys just don't have – like, I would have thought Jaden McDaniels would be a sneaky great rebounder a couple years ago when he kind of came in as this raw you know, figure – you know, what's he going to be? And I would have said, man, he's just going to be like energy guy. He's going to wind up, giving you like 15 points and 9 rebounds without ever running a set for him. Mm-hmm. And he's not a good rebounder, or he's just not attentive to it, I guess, which is part of the skill set of rebounding.
He's not big, right? Like, he's got that Kevin Durant body, but Kevin Durant has no problem grabbing rebounds. And it is weird because too, like, you see a lot of times where he catches a ball on a roll and he goes up for these dunks, and he has like one of the quickest jumps in the league. Like, all of a sudden he catches the ball and his elbows are at the rim.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's not an athleticism thing. I mean, yeah, sometimes maybe he's not, you know, the biggest guy out there physically, but, and he's also on the perimeter a lot. Again, he guarded Ja Morant for most of that Friday game. He guarded Garland. So he's out there a little bit more, but he's part of the issue too. Like, you know, when your guy puts up a 30 footer, you got to dig in and go get the rebounds. So I've liked his defense. I'm clearly biased. I think I see a lot in him. His offense has been, he's making an offensive leap this year. He's hitting more corner threes. So that's been good. But again, at some point, it's going to become a major talking point. If we're going to harp on Carl for never figuring out about falling out, the same goes for Jaden. Because if you get 12 fouls in two games, that just tells me that you're getting guys to the free throw line and that you're getting on the bench and it sucks all around. So you got to stop fouling and find ways to be a physical presence without literally punching guys in the stomach.
Okay, per 36 minutes, if you just neutralize everyone's minutes per 36 minutes, not counting Nate Knight, who has only played 13 minutes on the season, Naz Reid leads the Timberwolves with 5.2 fouls per 36 minutes. A little bit of a foul machine. Jaden McDaniels also getting handsy at 4.6 fouls per 36 minutes. Torian Prince surprisingly handsy this season at 4.5 fouls. Just comes in and bodies a guy up once in a while. And then Karl Anthony Towns completes the Mount Rushmore of Timberwolves handsiness at 4.1 fouls per 36 minutes.
And even when Jaden fouled out yesterday and they got a T, like, it was a bad call. he kind of just gets pushed around and stuff. And again, I think that's him trying to figure out a new level of his strength. But I've liked what I've seen. I mean, he gave Ja Morant hell on Friday night. And it's kind of the reason Ja became more of a facilitator and going to get rebounds because he couldn't score at will. But he just has to know again, like, this Wolves team is probably ideally one really good wing short. Maybe that's Josh Minot down the road or whatever, but they don't have another kind of long wing to put out there. Torian Prince is good, but he doesn't have the length and the athleticism. So
again,
it's gonna become an issue. Like, if Finch can't trust you to not foul guys late in games, he's not gonna play you on the court. So, but at least his shot has come around. I'm optimistic about that. I'm really optimistic still on however this all plays out. And if we're all pissed off by Thursday again, the 2020 draft class for this franchise really did kind of save everything. I mean, to get Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels in the same year and to have those guys on rookie deals is pretty important for what they're trying to put out there with their big three, you know, in Rudy and Carl and D'Lo.
Yeah. Okay. I know we kind of blended in some of the least favorite things there, but least favorite things about the Timberwolves lately, I think we need to talk about Anthony Edwards a little bit more here.
Yeah.
The Memphis game, and he even kind of called his shot before that Memphis game after they lost to Phoenix. He said, all right, we're going on the road. Memphis is going to bring it out of us. Memphis is the, it's almost like he's talking to himself though, because Memphis brought it out of him. You know, he goes off 10 of 16 from the field, 28 points. He just looked like the bouncy Anthony Edwards and the guy that was that we've seen three or four other times this season. And then again, they won the game last night. He didn't necessarily need to, like, D'Lo was sort of the straw that stirs the drink from the guard perspective. And Karl Anthony Towns had one of his best games of the year last night. So, you know, I get that there's going to be games where maybe Ant isn't the driving focal point on offense, but just like picked up a bunch of fouls. He was taking some bad shots toward the end of the game too. One of them did go in, that ISO two-pointer, that mid-range shot that I think put the Wolves back up by two possessions. But there was a great piece. I think Britt Robson wrote something, and Johnny Kay has too, just kind of outlining his lack of perceived joy on the court this year.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a staple when we talk about culture and leadership. This is kind of one of my criticisms of Karl Anthony Towns over the year. He doesn't bring a joyous enthusiasm to work.
Mm-hmm.
He gets swallowed up by the pressure and the criticism. And I think this team, and not that Pat Bev is like Mr. Fun, but they need someone to tell everyone it's okay. This is ultimately fun too. Like, we're all making a ton of money to play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But when pressure and expectations mount, that Jimmy Butler, Tom Thibodeau season was miserable. And I think Jimmy Butler and Tom Thibodeau kind of like that. They're actually happy in the misery of basketball.
Right.
Karl Anthony Towns is not. That is not a, like, there's once in a while he can go to that little, that dark little place, the zero dark 30 LeBron place, you know, where he sees people chirping him on Twitter and stuff, and he'll go to that dark place. But that's not a sustainable state of mind for Towns over the course of 6 months. And I don't think it is for Ant either. So maybe I'm just being like, I don't know, maybe this is just like idiotic pseudo psychology, but I think for Ant and Towns to thrive over the course of a full NBA season, there has to be a level of joyousness and fun. And ultimately, those guys are the ones that have to create it, because they're kind of the leaders of the team. So I see them playing without joy or taking like the pressure and everything so seriously and wondering like, oh man, someone needs to change that tone. It's like, well, those guys need to change the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Edwards, go have fun playing basketball. Why do you look like this is a job? What is causing that feeling for him? So that's just one of my observations, is just like the lack of fun and enthusiasm coming from Anthony Edwards and sometimes Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, statistically, just to your point about Ant's last two games, he obviously, bright lights Friday night, ESPN, he had a really good game. He was hitting shots. He really does, whether you want to call it a snowball effect or like a locomotive, like you can physically feel it on through the TV when he starts getting going. It just looks like he's getting supercharged. He's in passing lanes. He's, you know, getting dunks in transition. But then to your point about Sunday night, 31 minutes, zero free throw attempts in a game that had 73 of them combined. And there's 55 fouls and he had five of them. So for him to basically ever play a game, in my opinion, for him to basically ever start and finish a game and not get to the free throw line is an abomination of the game. Like, you're just too physical and too athletic. Also, Cleveland, it wasn't like they had a ton of resistance out there with guys like Garland and CeeDee Osmond and stuff. So you need to get to the line. And if you maybe just, again, if D'Lo's cooking or Carl's cooking, when you get the ball, if you're like, well, I'm running out of shot attempts because my other guys are like really playing well, then just go to the basket again and get to the free throw line. So that's pretty much uncalled for. Like, you can't do that. But yeah, to your point about happiness, I don't know. Conspiracy Kyle kind of thinks, you know, he was sick too last week when Rudy was sick. And then Rudy obviously went to like the COVID protocols, and I don't know them anymore. Like, I don't really know how you go into that. Like, you can maybe just lie, but something just has been off. Like, yeah, Friday he popped, but again, last night he just looked kind of lifeless. And I think you make a really good point about Carl and this franchise and this culture. And I don't think you would disagree with this, but I also think too, some of these things just have to be directly on the player. Like, D'Lo's just not playing well. There's no one else to blame. For Ant, it's like, why are you not just happy? Like, this is the most talent you've ever had. This is the most recognition you ever have. People love you. And I just wonder, and this is such a take, this is blazing, but like, I just wonder if, you know, that off the court stuff with Instagram, like he started media day, like being kind of a bad guy for a while. Like, people like asking him non-fun questions. It wasn't about, you know, movies and diets and all the fun stuff that we've come to love with Ant.
Yeah,
it was more serious stuff.
Then his teammate came out 2 weeks later and kind of took a shot at him, a sideways shot about eating Popeyes. I don't know. Does he wear some of that stuff? Is he still wearing some of that stuff?
And again, maybe he just has, you know, these guys have a lot of stuff going on in their lives that we never find out about. So I'm not trying to just draw exact lines, but just you can physically see that he's a bigger and stronger and faster, but also he just doesn't have a bright color to him, as my hippie friends would say. So he just, that is on him. That is my point. Like, yes, Carl can support him. Last week he said, you know, that's my brother. I'd take a bullet for him. Thought he said all the right things. But also some of this is just like, yo, man, you're 21. Like, if you can't find joy in this, I don't know who else to blame, because I know that the assistant coaches and his teammates are trying to build him up. So, again, he looked like his old self on Friday after a week and a half of kind of disappearing. And maybe he was sick. Who knows what's going on? But then, yeah, for all the good that happened last night. And I don't know, Phil, maybe it's just as simple as he doesn't know yet how to be a third banana. On a night where his teammates are cooking, but that's when you want to see him, you know, like thinking they had one steal and, or I think actually no steals and one block. You want to see him like, okay, my guys are cooking tonight. I'm just going to go like, I'm going to go take Garland in the fourth. I'm not going to let that guy drop 50. So I'm just going to play defense for the fourth quarter. That's the type of stuff that elevates you from, you know, a star. There's a lot of stars in the NBA. Every team has at least a couple stars. Mm-hmm. But that's what elevates you to, like, you know, you talked about being all defense or wanting to be an MVP. That's the type of stuff. Those guys don't take nights off. You got to go 78 games a year, busting it on both ends. And he's not doing that right now. And it's preventing him from taking that leap.
Yep. You kind of nailed it too. Like the difference between a star and a superstar. Now these are sort of ambiguous categories that we are creating here. It's not about what a player can do at his best. And this has been my gripe with D'Lo too. It's like, I know D'Lo can drop 30 points and get hot and shoot some threes. That is not a question. He was the number two overall pick. It is not a question whether he can dominate a basketball game at his best. It's how often over the course of 82 games, on the nights where you aren't feeling it, on the nights where your shot's not dropping, right, where your energy is low or you're banged up or something's happening in your personal life or whatever it is, what is your floor?
Exactly.
And Anthony Edwards, we've kind of seen it with D'Lo. His floor is like, you can't play him. You have to pull him off the court and put Jordan McLaughlin in the game. Anthony Edwards, I think his floor is a little higher now because you're not, I don't think you're seeing him. I mean, he's played 30 or more minutes in every single game this year. Mm-hmm. So you're not seeing like second half DMPs and stuff like that from him. But you're seeing four games already this year where he scored 11 points or fewer. You're seeing, let's see here. You've seen, my God. Half the games, he's shot 38% or worse from the field. He's just turning into this sort of volume shooter, and he makes it worse by chucking even more three. So I would like to see, for the third-year leap to become a real thing, we've seen what he looks like on the Friday night against Memphis. Mm-hmm. We've seen it against he had the 30-point game against Oklahoma City. He had the game against the Spurs where he dropped 34, right? We know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to tighten up the floor
so
that his bad nights, he's giving you 18 points because he got to the line nine times or something. You know, that's the next evolution for him.
Yeah. Jaden McDaniels, as much as I like him, isn't a star. Jalen Noel, as much as you and I like him, isn't a star. And like Jalen the other night, I think against Memphis, had 2 points and was truly unplayable to the point where they just couldn't put him back out there. But for Ant, it's like, it's okay. And we've always talked about this. You've always talked about this from football. Like, it's okay to have higher expectations. And when you are saying MVP and all NBA and All-star, like those guys, there's no better way to put it. It's not, you don't graduate to that level because your ceiling gets higher. You graduate to that level because your floor gets higher.
Yeah.
And if last night D'Lo's cooking and he's got 30 and he's the reason they're going to win, then maybe you should just have, you know, 14, 9, and 6. And most of those points are off the free throw line. And then also, too, like you're just guarding Garland to close that last stint out because you know that Jaden's going to get a bad whistle or he's on the bench. It's just, what are the other things you can do? Superstars in this league, it's all about winning. Stars get buckets, right? But superstars, it's like, what do you do to help your team win in all categories, even the ones that maybe don't get counted or in a box score? So up and down for, you know, this weekend was really crazy from a Timberwolves perspective because it was the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. But now against Orlando and or Philadelphia, like what can you do? Because that 10-day stretch where he was just kind of literally not moving – was concerning, and we haven't really seen that in his first 2 years since he arrived in Minnesota. That was like Georgia Anthony Edwards, and you would hope that that can finally go and be behind him for good.
Yeah. Kyle, before we wrap this episode of Flagrant House, it's time now to look at the current playoff picture and where the Wolves stand in the Western Conference. All right, so bad news. They're not in it. They're not. Not only are they not in the playoff picture, they're not in the play-in picture either. How about this? The Blazers and the Jazz are tied with the Nuggets for the number one seed in the Western Conference right now. There's percentage point differences, so they would actually be seeded. But those three teams are tied for the best record in the Western Conference right now. And then you get the Suns and Grizzlies both tied, and the Mavericks. And so those would be your six teams avoiding a play-in. All of them are 7-5 or better. Your play-in teams would be the Pelicans at 7-6, tied with the Clippers, the Kings at 6-6, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, the feisty Thunder, I believe the youngest team in the NBA at 6-7 right now. They're tied with the Spurs for the last play-in spot. And that leaves these four teams on the outside looking in. Well, technically, Thunder or Spurs would also be, but they're tied. Wolves at 6-8, just ahead of the Warriors at 5-8. The Lakers are 3-10. As much of a train wreck as the Lakers have been, they're only 2.5 games back of the Timberwolves. So some self-awareness as we make fun of the Lakers. And then the Rockets are headed for number one pickville. That is clearly their stated situation. So they are not, if the playoffs and the play-in started today, it would not include our Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, they are 3.5 games back of first place in the West and 3.5 games ahead of last place.
How about that? So just that's amazing. They're 3.5 back of the number one seed.
And you know,
let's get it. Come on.
If any reason for you Portland to play this song is just great. if I've learned nothing else from this experiment, it's that I'm just gonna stop looking at the schedule in August and September, because we thought that they had this easy start to the season, and then you just said it, like those teams that the Jazz, the Thunder, those are top teams in the West all of a sudden.
When do they get that cakewalk game against the Warriors, the 13 seed? Let's bring guys on.
If you do love studying the calendar, so yeah, they had that easy stretch where they underperformed, and then they just got punched in the mouth by Phoenix and by Milwaukee and then by Memphis. But now if you look kind of peak the schedule, they have this stretch of games. I think it's like 7 or 8 games, Orlando, Philadelphia, Miami, Indiana, Charlotte, Golden State, Washington, before hosting Memphis again to kind of bookend those two Memphis games. All those teams are like bottom, you know, 6 or 7 in their conference. They're not very good teams. So now you have another stretch of like, okay, this is, you played bad teams, or you thought bad teams, you lost. You played good teams and you lost. And now it's like, okay, can you kind of, these are all the middle of the pack teams. Everyone they play in the next 2.5 weeks between now and the end of November are all Minnesota Timberwolves teams. The Warriors are DNP and their young guys. The Miami Heat look old. Like, all these teams have major issues and their fan bases are going crazy. So now you're starting to play against teams that are just like you, underperforming, have a bunch of storylines, don't look like they're having fun on the court. So I think these next 7 or so games are going to be really telling to figure out, can you go from 6-8 to, I don't want to do math right now, but can you go to 12-11? Can you kind of get back over 500 before you get into December and trades start to increase and teams start to tank and all that stuff? So a really important stretch of basketball here for these next couple of weeks.
We'll keep you posted with the playoff picture update here halfway through November.
Might be my favorite thing.
On November 14th.
Playoff, just start building your brackets.
Let's do it. All right. So any other final words for the Timberwolves as they continue to dig their way out of this sub 500 ditch?
No, just 2 games again on the road this week. I think Saturday's on NBA TV, so kind of national TV, but 2 good litmus tests. Orlando's big and strong, and they play like 5 centers at some point. Your favorite guy, Bol Bol, is out there just doing his thing. And then against a Philly team, Joel Embiid had like 54, 18, and 7 blocks last night. So yeah. I'm really excited to see every time they play Philadelphia, they always throw Carl at Joel Embiid. I'm excited to see Joel Embiid against Rudy Gobert. That's going to be one of the things you did. You brought him in here to guard the team's best centers. So that should be a really fun game. But 6-8, coming off a good win, playing probably their best basketball of the season, which, again, the bar is laying on the carpet. But let's see what they can do over these next couple of weeks.
Yep. All right. We're still setting the bar, leaving the bar at 50 wins. We'd like to see the Wolves win 50 games before, for the first time in 18 years and before we die, as I mix catchphrases. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl. We're setting that bar a little higher. We want the Wolves to just, like, I don't know, get back in the play-in and then win 50 games. And kind of take it from there.
Justin,
I don't know if
Jefferson,
you can fit all that on a T-shirt or not. But
Justin Jefferson might be, after that catch yesterday, he might be the Timberwolves' third-best rebounder. He just knows how to go up and get the ball. If the players would try to go grab the ball like Justin Jefferson grabs the ball, the Timberwolves are going to be okay.
I agree. They should definitely sign him to a 10-day contract here at some point. All right, we'll see you next time on Flagrant Hollis, your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.